Have you ever noticed how dissatisfaction can creep in even during your happiest moments? You get the promotion you wanted, but within weeks, you're eyeing the next level. You finally buy your dream home, yet soon you're browsing renovation ideas. This restless quality of human experience isn't a personal failing. It's the starting point of Buddhism. Steve Hagen's Buddhism Plain and Simple cuts through centuries of ritual and mysticism to reveal something startlingly direct. The solution to our suffering isn't somewhere else, sometime later, or dependent on believing anything supernatural. It's about learning to see clearly what's actually happening right now. Like guests starving at an abundant feast because they don't recognize the food before them, we overlook the completeness of this present moment while chasing an imaginary future satisfaction. What makes this book revolutionary isn't exotic wisdom, but its radical simplicity, an invitation to wake up to reality as it actually is, not as we think it should be. The Buddha described human existence as dukkha, a wheel slightly out of alignment. Picture riding in a cart with one misaligned wheel. At first, the bumpy ride might feel stimulating, but mile after mile, that persistent wobble becomes unbearable. You land your dream job, but soon face office politics. You fall in love, but eventually navigate conflicts and compromises. We experience three layers of suffering. First comes obvious pain, heartbreak, illness, loss. Second is the suffering of change, our futile attempts to freeze pleasant moments or avoid inevitable transitions. Third is existential unease, that vague dissatisfaction persisting even during good times. When the Buddha met a farmer complaining about his crops, wife, and children, he explained that everyone has 83 problems that simply come with being alive. The 84th problem, wanting not to have problems, is the only one we can actually solve. Our real suffering comes from resistance, not from life's natural challenges. Notice what happens when you get a headache. The physical sensation is one thing, but then your mind adds layers. Why now? What if it gets worse? This mental resistance creates suffering through three forms of craving: desire for pleasure, thirst for existence, and craving for non-existence. Consider how we chase sensory pleasures. You enjoy a delicious meal, but before you've finished, your mind is already thinking about the next one. We accumulate possessions, achievements, and experiences, believing some magical combination will finally bring lasting contentment. The problem isn't that we haven't acquired the right things, it's that we're trying to solve an internal problem with external solutions. When asked whether a self exists, the Buddha remained silent. When pressed about whether no self exists, he stayed silent again. Both answers miss what's actually happening. We imagine some unchanging essence called me that persists throughout life. Yet when we look carefully, we find only constant change. Your body has completely regenerated its cells. Your thoughts, memories, and personality have transformed. We say, "I'm not a morning person," or "I'm terrible at math," as if these statements capture something permanent, when they're just temporary patterns we've mistaken for identity. This confusion creates suffering. We take offense when someone criticizes our opinions because we've confused ourselves with our thoughts. We fear death because we believe there's a solid self that will cease. The self isn't something we have, it's something we do. It's a verb masquerading as a noun, a process we've frozen into a thing. Look at any object near you, a coffee cup perhaps. Remove the clay, the potter who shaped it, the kiln that fired it, the hands that hold it, and the concept cup that allows you to recognize it. What remains? The cup exists only as a temporary convergence of countless conditions. Everything arises together in mutual dependence. Every concept simultaneously creates its opposite. You can't have up without down, good without bad, self without other. These divisions exist only in our minds. When you truly see that nothing has independent existence, you're not a separate agent acting on an external world, you're an inseparable part of reality expressing itself. The third truth states that whatever arises must cease. Since suffering arises, it can cease. This cessation is nirvana, not tranquil oblivion, but something immediate and practical. Nirvana means unborn, ungrown, unconditioned, that which provides escape from the conditioned world of constant change. It points to the awareness observing all changing phenomena without being caught in that change. When Steve Hagen visited his dying friend in the hospital, they sat mostly in silence. When his friend gasped in distress, Hagen simply said, "Wherever we go, it's always like this." His friend's face transformed with sudden understanding. He died the next day, perhaps seeing that existence's changing nature isn't a problem to solve, but reality itself, and that something in us recognizes this without fear. Nirvana isn't achieving a special state or escaping difficulty. It's seeing thoroughly that everything exists in constant flux, including our suffering. When you truly see that thoughts, emotions, and sensations arise and pass like clouds, you stop identifying completely with them. You still experience pain and sadness, but you're no longer imprisoned by them. The wanting loosens its grip when seen clearly, like a nightmare dissolving when you realize you're dreaming. The fourth truth, the Eightfold Path, isn't a journey from point A to point B. The moment you step onto it, the entire path is realized. This path includes right view, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and meditation. But right here means seeing versus not seeing, being in touch with reality rather than deluded by fixed ideas. Right view isn't holding a particular perspective. It's seeing how things actually are in constant flux. Right intention means resolving to search for truth with absolute commitment, fighting for it as you'd fight for breath underwater. You cannot learn truth from anyone. It's seen only through direct observation. Right speech begins with avoiding lies because lying distracts the mind with tracking falsehoods. It also means speaking without cruelty, gossip, or idle chatter that fragments attention. Right action proceeds from an unfettered mind, not frozen in rigid thought. Like a maple leaf falling, showing front, showing back, it's natural response rather than forced control. Right livelihood addresses earning your keep without violence to others, the environment, or yourself. Right effort is conscious engagement with each moment. Right mindfulness means not forgetting our real problem, suffering caused by confusion. Right meditation involves collecting the mind so it becomes focused and aware, not to achieve special states, but to see clearly what's already here. Real moral responsibility comes from being awake in each situation. When we act from recognition of wholeness rather than illusion of separation, our actions become naturally appropriate. We constantly package reality into concepts, but these explanations can never substitute for reality itself. The moment we capture truth in static views, we create paradox and confusion. We hold rigid views of ourselves, identifying with groups, behaviors, and beliefs, making us defensive and locked into inflexible patterns. But we aren't anything in particular. There are two kinds of knowledge. One consists of beliefs and concepts. Intellectual grasping we call knowledge, but this isn't true knowing. Relying on concepts produces fear and confusion because beliefs invite contradiction and doubt. True knowing comes from direct perception, seeing without conceptual filters. We still use concepts to communicate, but stop mistaking them for reality. Your prison exists within your mind. You've created chains through ignorance, not stupidity, but actively ignoring what's happening in favor of concepts about what's happening. Yet the moment you step on the path to freeing the mind, you've traversed it entirely. Our fundamental desires for pleasure, avoiding death, and controlling extinction arise from confusion about change. The Buddha taught two ways to extinguish these. Less desire means developing awareness of unhealthy patterns and having wisdom to turn back. Forgetting the self means recognizing your interconnection with everything. Your life interpenetrates all activities of the universe. Your experience is real, but the experiencer you imagine cannot be found upon careful examination. When this becomes clear through direct observation, the fear of death loosens its grip. We are already enlightened, but habitually overlay our direct experience with thoughts and beliefs. Liberation comes from realizing we need no story at all. We can directly see reality by fully engaging this moment as it is. As death approached, the Buddha told his followers, "Be a light unto yourself. Betake yourselves to no external refuge. Truth cannot be received from teachers or gurus. You find it only by noticing when your mind is leaning, when you see something out there apart from yourself that you must acquire or avoid. Everything you need is already here, present in this moment. The feast is spread before you. Whether you recognize it and partake, whether you awaken or remain caught in confusion, is completely up to you. Not tomorrow, not after you've read enough books or meditated enough hours, but right now. The question isn't what you must do to become free, but what you must stop doing, what mental habits you must see through to recognize the freedom that was never actually lost."